Welcome to the Nuance Mid-Cap Value Semi-Annual Update Conference Call. My name is James, and I'll be your operator for today's call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. During the question-and-answer session, if you have a question, please press star 1 on your touchtone phone. Also note this conference is being recorded. I'd now like to turn the call over to Paul Gillespie. Paul, you may begin.
Thanks, James, and good afternoon, everybody. As James mentioned, this is Paul Gillespie, Vice President and Client Portfolio Manager at Nuance Investments. I want to thank everyone for joining us today and for our Nuance Concentrated Value Semiannual Update Call. In the email invitation to today's call, there was a link to a presentation that we will be referring to during the call. For any reason, if you do not have that presentation, you can email us at client.services@nuanceinvestments.com, and we will email it right over. Before we begin the discussion today, I do want to let you know that this presentation may include statements regarding the intent, belief, or current expectations of our portfolio management team. Actual results may differ materially from such forward-looking statements due to a number of factors, including changes in general economic conditions, market liquidity, market volatility, and other market, financial, or governmental uncertainties. During the call today, we'll be giving an update on the firm and the team. We will also go through a summary of the investment process and updated performance. We will conclude our prepared remarks with a mid-year review and an outlook of the portfolio. We will then open the call up for questions. With that, I'll turn the call over to Scott Moore, our Chief Investment Officer and President. Scott?
Thank you, Paul, and good afternoon, everyone. On page 2 of the presentation, you can see our agenda for today. Paul touched on that, so I'll go ahead and move forward to page 3, which is a short summary of our firm. From our seed capital in 2008 of $30 million, we have been fortunate to grow today to over $1.7 billion of assets under management. Using our classic value approach of identifying leading business franchises, studying those companies over a very long period of time and purchasing them only for our clients when their risk reward is better than that of the market set of opportunities. We have 3 products: our concentrated value strategy that is in the early stages of closing to new clients, that's about $1 billion, our mid-cap value strategy that we will focus on this afternoon, which has grown from about $200 million a year or two ago to about $700 million today. And will close to new clients at $2 billion. And our Nuance Concentrated Long Short product, which started off here just a little over a year or so ago and is up to $50 to $60 million today. Each of our products is capacity constrained to position Nuance and its clients for future returns, as we believe very strongly that staying relatively small in assets under management is a competitive advantage for us versus our top-tier peers in our spaces. It is important to note that we will not be closing to our existing clients when our capacity is reached, but rather we will simply not allow new clients to purchase the product to, again, ensure our going-forward potential outperform our indexes and peers, and we hope you guys appreciate the way we think about that. On page 4, you can see our investment team. As a group, over 60 years of cumulative experience. Importantly, most of the history of this group has been incredibly stable. We have some long-tenured folks who have worked with me for a very long time, and they largely grew up on the Nuance investment process and approach that we will talk about here in just a minute. The process itself and the people on the team have seen really pretty much any cycle you can imagine, everything from the Nifty 50 era of the mid-90s, the tech bubble in the late 90s, the tech burst, and then subsequent modest industrial recession in the early 2000s, all the way to the commodity boom, the finance bull market, and then, of course, the subsequent financial recession, financial crash that we had in 2007-2008. It's important to note that we've seen all of those things. This process has been through all of those cycles, and our goal with our team is to keep the group stable and cohesive for many years to come so our clients can continue to gain confidence and trust in our expertise and our depth of knowledge through all kinds of cycles. On page 5, you can see a single-page schematic of our time-tested process. This process has not changed since the inception of Nuance, and you can be assured it will not. Consistency of process is also critical to consistent execution and long-term performance in our view, and of course, gets back to the idea that we continue to gain confidence and trust from our clients as consistent process and a consistent team allows you to have further knowledge and trust about how we will be managing your money over the long term. The big picture summary of the process is that we are a bottoms-up, one stock at a time, classic value firm searching for leading business franchises. We define those as having number one or number two market share positions and very sustainable market share positions. We perform in-depth financial analysis that results in a mid-cycle or normal set of financial statements. With the mid-cycle or normal set of financial statements, which includes our own proprietary estimates of earnings, EBITDA, cash flow, and really all the balance sheet and cash flow metrics as well, we then perform a pretty extensive valuation study that emphasizes not only the fair value of a particular business at a given time, but also the potential trough value to determine a true mid-cycle fair value and a recession period trough value estimate for each stock, with the end goal being having 250 leading business franchises or so from which we can invest that are all above average businesses, and we only buy those for our clients when the risk reward is better than that of the market opportunities. I get a lot of questions about why this process is different, what makes it unique, why we've been able to achieve the risk-adjusted returns we have over time, and I thought on this call I might add that to my presentation. First, we believe we are more diligent than most in our competitive work. We take a lot of pride in making sure that we understand potential competitive transitions, certainly in seeing market share losers that are more permanent rather than transitory. We also believe our mid-cycle estimates and mid-cycle set of financial statements is a more logical way to determine the appropriate denominators and with the dividend numerator for the calculation of fair values and trough values. So logic plays into what we do, I think, more than most. And lastly, our equal emphasis on fair and trough values, I think, gives us a clearer vision of both risk and reward versus certainly not all, but most of our peers over time. I think that clear vision of risk-reward in today's market is pretty critically important, and I'll be alluding to that here in just a few minutes. So with that backdrop, how did we do during the first 6 months of 2017, and what has been our performance over time? Turning to page 6 of the presentation, first, 2017 is off to a pretty solid start. We were up 6.65% net of fees versus our primary benchmark, the Russell Midcap Value Index, up 5.17. The S&P mid-value was up 3.24. We did lag the S&P 500 a bit for the first 6 months of the year, but recall that that is a secondary benchmark of ours. We certainly anticipate and have a primary goal of beating the S&P 500 over the long term, but in shorter periods of time, we certainly can lag or outperform it. You just have to look at last year where we were up more than 20%. After fees, et cetera, and the S&P 500 was up 11 or 12%. So clearly we beat it handily just last year. Assuming we can hold on to this 2017 year-to-date lead, this would mark the seventh time in our 9 years, 8 out of 10, if you include our stub year in 2008, that we have outperformed our primary benchmark during a calendar year. We're pretty proud of that, and we take note of that because we appreciate that our clients often when they're talking to their end client, the calendar year is an important time horizon for everyone. As for the long term, as we approach our 9th anniversary at Nuance here in the next month or two, we are clearly pleased with our 16.78% net of fee annual percentage rate return versus the Russell Midcap Value Index performance of 15.17 and the S&P 500 of 13.64. And then lastly, on performance, if you'll turn to page 7, we'll see our performance versus our peers over the long term. You can see we are 6th percentile versus the Morningstar Midcap Value Peer Group, 8th percentile versus the Lipper Midcap Value Peer Group. Clearly, we're pleased to be in the top decile in total return since our inception here about 9 years ago. Importantly to us, If you look at the middle data column also on page 7, which is our standard deviation measures, we are among the least risky product as measured by standard deviation, which is our own internal benchmark, is the way that we measure our riskiness versus our peers. Putting those two numbers together, you can come up with a risk-adjusted return, or what we call a Sharpe ratio, definitionally Sharpe ratio, which has also been our primary performance bogey since the inception of the firm. And you put our total return numbers and our risk numbers together, and clearly we are, so far, first percentile in all peer groups since our inception in 2008. And we're pleased with where we're sitting here after that amount of time. So on page 8, what drove our outperformance during the first 6 months of the year versus the Russell Midcap Value Index? Our outperformance was led by the healthcare sector. Those of you who read our quarterly write-ups and listen to my semi-annual call back in late January, early February, we were discussing in detail our growing out bit and rather large overweight in the healthcare space. In late 16 and early 17, fears related to uncertainty surrounding the Affordable Care Act resulted in sharp underperformance in several of our leading business franchises in that sector, and as such, the risk rewards of those companies became very clearly top tier versus the market opportunities that were out there at the time. Cerner Corporation, as an example, is a name that we took up in weight. Since we purchased it, we were up approximately 30%. Globus Med is another one that we liked very much, a dominant spinal manufacturer with cash on the balance sheet, up nearly 40% since we purchased it. Smith & Nephew, a little longer-term holding, has done very well, up about 20%, and there are others. This healthcare opportunity is a pretty classic late-cycle one-off opportunity for us and has certainly paid off for us thus far. Other outperforming spaces, including the materials world, Praxair and Lenergy were two stocks that we liked. They're actually combining. There was some skepticism that the deal would close. We didn't think we were paying for the potential $1 billion of synergies that could occur if it closed. And now that the expectations for that to happen are materializing, we have achieved some nice outperformance in that combination. The important piece being that the market was not anticipating that either company would be able to combine, and it looks like they will now. We also outperformed quite nicely in the consumer staples world, an area we were also talking about late in the year. Multinational companies like Pernod Ricard, the number two player in spirits, were getting hurt because of really very strong dollar movement versus European currencies, which was resulting in uncertainty around normalized earnings power for those companies, but also valuations were getting out of whack. So we saw some excellent opportunities there. Pernod was an excellent stock for us as well. The primary negative to note was actually our underweight in the technology space. If you've been listening to these calls and for our long-term clients, you know that we've been longer-term positive on the space in general, and has been one of our largest positives from an attribution perspective since the inception of this product. But during the 6 months, our underweight here cost us about 100 basis points. That said, what we are seeing and the reason for the underweight is a classic peak returns on capital period for most of the technology companies that we follow. And in this case, the subsequent follow-on is peak valuations on those peak returns, which results in most of the stocks being significantly overvalued today. The downside risk clearly is substantial in our opinion, and that leads us to a very significant underweight for those companies, certainly looking for better spots to move back into that space over time. Lastly, cash was also a drag on performance in such an up year, but clearly we are pleased that it didn't hold us back from beating our benchmark. On average, we had about 9% cash for the period. For those of you who have been long-term clients, for those of you looking at us today, our maximum cash position is 10%. One last note before I turn our attention to the going forward outlook. Our team has decided to go quiet and will not be discussing energy-related stocks and issues for at least the next quarter. The space was a positive contributor for the product during the first 6 months of the year, about 40 or 50 basis points due to our underweight stance. As you might imagine, that has resulted in some potential valuation opportunities that are starting to look attractive due to that underperformance. However, because of a lot of uncertainty surrounding the space, some positive, some negative, we are going to take a little extra time studying our competitive positions of our leaders that we have on the list today, ensuring that we're comfortable with our mid-cycle financial statements for those companies, and really just reevaluating the entire space given an awful lot of potential change in that space right now. While not something we very often do, the combination of our increased size and liquidity means there's a couple of potential new names in the energy space where if we were to kind of highlight our potential positive or negative, it actually might not be an appropriate thing to do, and we want to lean and edge towards protecting our clients' best interest, of course, at all times. So a little quiet period for energy is where we're going to go. The final topic today is the 2017 outlook, and you can turn to page 9 to see our team's thoughts. First, and probably most importantly, this will not be a glowing outlook. At year-end 2016, we were finding plenty of pockets of opportunity to continue a positive overall tone. We were discussing things like the multinational opportunities in consumer staples, certainly the overweight we were taking in healthcare, which looked very attractive, and we were also talking about the transportation industry, the trucking space in particular, which had some nice opportunities. Many of those opportunities have now come to fruition, and we believe that today, a positive or aggressively positive tone in particular is not valid nor an appropriate position to take. Our list of 250 leading business franchises is now overvalued by greater than 20%, to be a little more specific, between 20 and 25%, and the downside risk is estimated by our team at about 55 to 60% for this entire list of leading business franchises that we have been studying for a very long time. I'm just going to restate that one more time to be clear. There's been some uncertainty a little bit about where we stand on this, and I want to clarify it. Our list of companies we've been studying for a very long time as a group is now overvalued by 20 to 25%, and the downside could be as much as 55 to 65%. Our portfolio, importantly, is much better than that risk reward. Our upside is about 0 to 5%, and our downside potential is approximately 35%. A much better risk reward than that of the market, and that makes us feel pretty good about our relative performance versus the market going forward. But it's important for me to note to our clients that the upside potential in today's world, in today's market, feels very limited. Remember, our overriding goal is to find you and your clients leading business franchises with dominant market share positions, sustainable competitive positions, excellent returns on capital, and solid balance sheets, and of course, buy them when they are better risk rewards than the market opportunities, which at Nuance is defined by our work on those 250 leaders. The bottom line of my discussion here is that the opportunity set has become very, very narrow. So given that backdrop, what are we doing to your portfolio and what are the opportunities that we see? First, from a bigger picture perspective, we are diversifying your portfolio. From our generally 50 to 60 names, we're now up to 70 to 80 names. That is to clearly protect against company-specific risk issues, and in my opinion is quite appropriate when so few even good risk rewards exist in the marketplace today. We also have a growing weight in what we call merger arbitrage situations, a segment of the long-only world I have used many times over the years, and a group of stocks that's particularly valuable in late cycles and very expensive market periods. Just to be clear, we don't do just any merger arb situation. We actually had a great client from New York call, was a little confused about this earlier in the week. We have to be comfortable with our knowledge of both buyer and seller. We have to believe the deal will pass all DOJ and competitive related tests. And lastly, we have to believe the buyer is so well financed that even in a financial crisis that they can afford to pay for and close on the deal. An example of an arbitrage situation we like quite a bit is the Whole Foods Amazon deal. We like it quite a bit versus the current set of risk rewards that are available to us. It's a $42 cash deal with Amazon obviously being the buyer. To us, there's very minimal to no competitive issues here at all. We have an amazingly well-financed buyer, and we are expecting on top of our $42 cash, roughly 50 cents of dividends before closing. It could be a little bit more, it could be a little bit less, depending on the timing of when it closes and when they go X on that final dividend towards the latter part of the year. So why would Whole Foods be a top five holding when the stock's at around 42 and that's what we're going to get at the end of this situation? It's all about risk reward. At $42 to $43 of an entry price, our upside was absolutely basically zero, barring a Costco, a Kroger, a Walmart coming in with a competing bid. But remember that that zero is versus the market set of opportunities of -20 to -25%. More importantly than that, when thinking about risk-adjusted returns and risk rewards that look attractive in the marketplace today, the downside of Whole Foods today, in our opinion, and it's certainly never a guarantee, but the downside also looks to be about zero. When you compare that with today's set of opportunities of -55 to 60%, you can see that the risk reward of Whole Foods looks pretty good and, in our opinion, is absolutely worth it being a top five holding today. You'll also see our merger arb situation that we're doing with the BDX-BCR deal. That's Becton Dickinson and Bard. It's a largely cash deal of a debt reduction and under-earnings company with dominant market share positions in the medication delivery and vascular access markets. We really like the combination of the companies. The financing seems very secured. We've got an under-earnings situation, and we've got a merger arbitrage situation that, based on our combined company fair values, can give us upside of 0 to 5%, and the downside is only about 15%. That is an outstanding risk reward, again, versus the -20 to 25% to fair value for our opportunities and the -55 to 60 for the market as a whole if we go through a recessionary period. Lastly, in the opportunity set, we have our classic nuanced stock opportunities. These are the bread and butter of what we have been doing for a very long time, but frankly, these are pretty rare right now due to valuations. But one such opportunity is Hub Group. Hub is a U.S.-based intermodal transportation logistics and trucking company. The company is currently earning about $1.60 versus our mid-cycle estimates in the mid-2s. Under-earnings is a direct result of trough period in trucking prices following a real overpurchase of trucks around the country. At 13 times our normal earnings per share, Hub is providing us with an excellent risk-reward, in our opinion. Really fits the classic nuanced stock opportunities of a leading business franchise, number one or number two in all of the business that they operate in, under-earning its potential due to a transitory reason. The market obviously is looking negatively on that, and that's providing us with the opportunity. We were actually selling the stock earlier this year in the $50 neighborhood, reducing that weighting because it achieved the outperformance that we'd hoped we could. They miss a quarter, and the stock is now traded back towards the mid-30s, and we are now adding to the position for our clients as the risk-reward is improving as the stock price has gone down. As far as the risks today, I think I've been pretty clear on the call where I think they are. Overvaluation really across the board is the largest risk that we're facing. And to be honest, much like late 1999, early 2000, or 2007, early into 2008, the world seems to once again forgotten just how much downside risk stocks can actually have. I can't emphasize this point enough. Typically, we certainly feel like we can find pockets of opportunities. Those pockets today are so rare that I need to emphasize to our clients how much downside risk stocks in general have, and we hope that our risk rewards are protecting our clients here more than most, and we think they will. As such, today, patience is the key word. Patience to either allow earnings and EBITDA and cash flows to grow into their current valuations, or patience to allow a correction to happen, which will provide us with some buying opportunities for our clients. We hope you'll appreciate our historical consistency in optimizing your risk reward across all sorts of market environments and grant us that patience while we wait on new pockets of opportunities to be presented. Thank you all for your continued confidence and support, and that concludes my prepared remarks. And with that, I'll open it up to any questions.
Thank you. We can now begin our question and answer session. If you have a question, please press star 1 on your touchtone phone. If you wish to be removed from the question queue, press the pound sign or the hash key. If you're using a speakerphone, you may need to pick up the handset first before pressing the numbers. Once again, if you have a question, press star 1 on your phone. Our first question is from Ben Napier.
Hey, Ben, how are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm doing great.
Good. Hey, I wanted to ask you about another strategy that Paul had mentioned to us on our quarterly call, where you guys are investing more in a little bit larger, more stable multinational names. To what extent would you envision that being as a part of the total portfolio?
Ben, let me see if I can clarify. Are you asking me about our Nuance Concentrated Value product?
He was talking to us about the mid-cap value.
Okay.
Are you buying, I mean, does that ring a bell at all?
Over the last 6 to 12 months, uncertainty in currencies, in particular, the Brexit situation has resulted in an amazingly strong dollar until the last 3 or 4 months, really back kind of fourth quarter of last year, early first quarter. We actually saw a lot of uncertainty created in many multinationals. I mentioned on the call the Pernod Ricard, the number 2 spirits maker, is one name that we participated in mid-cap value. A little more recently, we bought Diageo, the number 1 spirits manufacturer. Both of those companies actually, because largely because of the currency and also a couple of good fundamental quarters in the spirits business, have made significant moves. So as far as the going forward opportunity, well, I certainly wish I could pound the table that was an awfully nice pocket of opportunity. Ben, to be frank, and I hope that I've been clear on the call, the reality is there are just very few clear, obvious pockets of valuation opportunity in the marketplace today. So I wouldn't want you to think that the big multinationals are a spot that I find, that has significant upside. I do think in general they have more downside protection than we're seeing in the market. But there's, those stocks have moved as well here recently. So a lot of that is also gone now.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
You bet.
Once again, if you have a question, press star 1 on your phone. I have a question from Fred Semmer.
Afternoon, Fred.
Good afternoon. Thanks for the call here. Say, I was just curious, in identifying companies with number 1 or number 2 market shares, that seems to be a pretty broad scope in terms of, geographic, product, et cetera. How do you define number 1 or number 2 market share?
We define it in particular niches that they operate in. So we won't, for example, if you take the packaging arena, we won't just look for the largest packaging companies, the largest can manufacturers, or the largest bottle manufacturers. We'll actually look down into that packaging world for example, the largest lid manufacturers, like the number 1, number 2 player in lids. It happens to be that Aptar Group, one of our holdings today, is the number 1 player in lids with over 50% market share. So if you think about Primatene Mist, dosage-related lids, you think about the no-spill Tide bottles, very value-add, somewhat engineered lids, any sort of higher-end LID is what Aptar Group does. They have co-located facilities with many of their customers like Procter & Gamble, et cetera. So we're not buying, for example, you know, a lid manufacturer that's a commodity water bottle lid. It's more of the value add. So it gets down into some very narrow niches as well as some broader niches. But, you know, we've been looking for these leaders. We talk about that broadly, but we've been looking for, you know, very good companies, number one or number two typically. From time to time, we'll find a number three guy who's gaining share enough where we think they can overtake the number two. But we've been looking for these really since I started this, you know, kind of using this process at my old firm back kind of in the mid to late 90s. And, you know, we think we've got a great list really across most of the sub-industries of the world to make sure that we can offer you through cycles, you know, really a nice, diverse set of leaders, you know, when they're out of favor.
Sure. Thank you.
Thanks for the call.
Our next question from Ken Spangler.
Afternoon, Ken.
Hi. Thank you very much. I appreciate this. This is very interesting. So in the next 6 months to a year, do you see a major, while you say stocks are getting very high priced, do you see a big drop coming in the next 6 months to a year in the market?
Yeah, I'm really glad you asked that question. I think it's the most obvious question to ask, and I will give you hopefully a reasonable answer to it, because the simplest thing to say is I have no idea, which of course is true. Markets work, I don't know. There's really two. The way I look at things from a valuation perspective, and I'll give you just first. I'll give you and everyone on the call a couple of numbers just to give you some perspective. On our mid-cycle earnings over all of these years of covering this mid-cap value world, for the entire group of our 250 leaders, the group's PE multiple has ranged from a little less than 10, and the last time that occurred actually was in 2009, so it wasn't that long ago, to upwards of in the low 20s. And I've never seen it really above 21 or 22 until just recently when we crossed 23 times on our internal work. It gives you an idea of I'm going to use the phrase extremity of the valuations that are out there today. And obviously being a more value-oriented, price-sensitive investor, that's a real message to me that there's a lot of downside risk in the stock. So then to your specific question, what then happens? I certainly wouldn't pinpoint it to 6 to 12 months, but I think there's two ways this could materialize and change could occur. Number one, not much does happen, and earnings and EBITDA grow into these valuations, and we end up with a flat-ish sort of overall market environment for a year or two while catch-up occurs. So you just kind of sit there. That would occur if the political uncertainties that exist today, you know, they just kind of stay that way if really nothing happens, for example. If economies continue to grow with this, you know, very slow, steady rates and inflation stays under control, I think that could certainly occur. Obviously, the other option, that would be the one where there is a significant correction. The reasons why a significant correction could occur are a couple of fold, and it's not just the valuation. It's that same political uncertainty. It's leverage, both in governments as well as in non-finance, non-utility companies. I've been writing for the last 6 to 12 months about the slow creep up of leverage we've seen in non-finance, non-utility companies. And you know, it's unfortunate, but the realities are that a lot of times company and people forget what happens to leveraged companies during difficult periods of the economy. And any sort of uncertainty, I believe, could be exacerbated by that increased leverage. So whether it's a slow creep up of EBITDA and earnings, of, you know, the growth of EBITDA and earnings and a more flat market to get the valuations back in order, or whether or not it comes from a correction, I don't know. I think either one is certainly a possibility. In both situations, it's a little hard for me to see a lot of market upside, though. Certainly, I don't think about the market the way most of my clients do. It's really looking at these 250 leaders is the way we define the market, and it's really difficult to see an enormous amount of upside in what we're doing. I think it is instructive, though, that I think we have some of the most stable, highest quality companies in the universe. So it does make me wonder what the downside outside of our universe could be, and I have a feeling it's more than ours.
Once again, if you have a question, press star one on your phone. It looks like that's all the questions, sir.
Thanks, James. Just as a reminder to everybody, there will be a recording of this call for that and for more information about Nuance. Please visit our website. Thank you for joining us today, and that concludes the call.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. This concludes today's conference. Thank you for participating. You may now disconnect.